Welcome to the Business of Show Business podcast with me, Jamie Boddy. On this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to industry experts and up-and-coming creatives as we unpack the side hustles, the stories, and the skills that make the entertainment and creative industries tick. So if you want to thrive and not just survive and build the career that you deserve, you're in the right place. Today on the Business of Show Business, I'm joined by musical theatre performer and fitness coach, Rory Phelan. Rory has performed in shows such as Heathers, Grease, Mamma Mia, and now he channels his passion for fitness and health into helping performers. He helps them get strong, he helps them with their resilience, and he helps them take control of their career. His experiences on stage and in the gym led him to create Stage Strong, a fitness platform exclusively for creatives. So in this episode, we're going to dive in. We're going to talk about life as a performer, how to sustain 8 shows a week, and of course, all things the business of show business. Rory, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Not too shabby. Obviously, new year, new us. For you as a fitness coach, this is probably prime time, isn't it, for everyone like trying to hit the gym?
It is. And it's one of those kind of times that I always think I always get really nervous about it because it's like, it's the start of the new year and everyone instantly, especially within our industry, is like, it's my year, it's time, everything's going to change. So yeah, it's hectic, but in a positive way.
It's one of those things, it wasn't until I got a dog that I now go out for walks a lot more when I could have gone for those walks pre-dog. So I guess when you get a lot of clients at this time of year, you're probably like, this is great, but we could have had this great at any time during the year.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that we always find that, you know, over the Christmas period where it's hectic with Panto and different things like that, you know, things start to slowly kind of die down a bit. You know, everyone's kind of preparing. And the instant that that kind of clock hits midnight the next day, everyone's like, I've got to make sure everything changes. Yeah. You know, this year is going to be crazy and all that different stuff. So it's definitely an interesting period.
And now to embarrass you, I've almost gone on your spotlight. I'm going to read out some of your credits just so the audience know more about you. So you have toured in Club Tropicana. You were Sunny in Grease, UK and international tour. Mm. Eddie in Mamma Mia at the Novello. Joey and understudy Tony in Saturday Night Fever. Ram in Heathers. And also the songs of George Michael have taken you all over the world. Okay. When was that moment for you that you was like, yes, performing is for me?
I would say, do you know what? Well, I came to performing pretty late. So I didn't start till I was about 19. But I'd say that the moment that I was like, okay, this is what I want to do was probably after college. It was in Saturday Night Fever where I was like, because that was my dream musical, you know. And I was like, okay.
It was like the flares for you, wasn't it?
Like, it was the flares. Yeah. As soon as I saw the white suit, I was like, I'm sold. Yeah. But yeah, I'd probably say that was the show that for me, made me go, right, okay, this is the industry that I want to stay in, like, forever.
And I always think performing is it's a gateway job, isn't it? In the fact that not only are you performing on stage, you're getting to travel, meet different people. So for you, for quite a while, did performing kind of scratch that itch? It kind of ticked a lot of boxes for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bit of a crazy one that I've managed to travel so much with work, you know, and it's taken me to places that I never thought that I'd get to perform in. And so I think that I always said to myself, I could never really call it a job because it's one of those things where I've been on so many, well, I'd call them holidays. I'm just singing and dancing while I'm there. But it's, because places like Israel, you know, Dubai, different places like that, I would have never have been to before if it wasn't for kind of like performing, really.
And on the flip side of that, do you find because it is what we love, our hobby is also our vacation, it's sometimes hard for performers to switch off? Have you ever had that moment then when you're like, yes, I love this, but the love of it almost bleeds into every aspect of yourself?
Yeah, and to be honest, it was kind of, that was part of the reason which kind of led me to kind of build Stage Strong, really, was the fact that I kind of felt that I lost myself within performing. I almost felt that I had no identity unless I was in a show, which for me feels weird because I never really kind of understood it until it started happening where I was like, okay, well, I've not got much of a life outside of, you know, being in a show. And it's great being in a show, but you need to have that a bit of a break and an interim, which I think was the big learning curve for me.
It wasn't until I met my now husband, who used to be a performer, but they work in education now. And he was like, you don't have a hobby. Like, you just, whenever you're not performing, you're like, you're researching, you're at class, you're doing this and that. And I was like, oh, we don't have hobbies, do we? And I guess for you now, has Stage Strong and your love of fitness almost, although that's become a business now, so that other hobby has become something. Yeah. But have you always found fitness as like a nice escape maybe from the full-time performing? Well,
the funny thing is fitness was what I always wanted to do as a career. That was, you know, growing up, I always wanted to be like a rugby player or work within physiotherapy. And I kind of weirdly
until
fell
you
in,
saw those flares.
Until I saw like the flares, and that was it. Yeah. But I weirdly kind of fell into performing. And so for me, that's always been my outlet. It's always been a thing of going, right, I love performing, but this is something I really, really love on the side. And so it's always been my kind of escapism. And I found for me that it's always been my kind of true, I don't know, constant in the background. Because even when shows and auditions are going crazy, I know that there's certain things that can make me feel happy outside of that. Because otherwise I found that when I'd lose that, if I got a no from an audition or anything like that, my whole day or week would be thrown. And like, it'd be a weird thing, and so many performers will relate to it, that you go to an audition, I used to be wiped. Like the whole day, I'd be like no energy. I'd be like, oh my God. I just felt like everything was taken away from me, purely because we put so much into it. Unless we've got another avenue outside of it, it can make the most amazing emotions happen, but also can like kill you also in other aspects.
Exactly. And then on that, like giving you all, touring in itself is a separate beast. Yeah, obviously, you've done a lot of that internationally and in the UK.
Yeah.
With fitness, it's structure, it's regimes. Did that kind of then also help then with that touring aspect? And maybe at least you had that idea of what structure should be?
Yeah, I think that it's so easy to overlook it because especially, God, if you do weekly touring here, it's rough. Yeah. By the time you've just kind of like blinked, you're moving on to a different city. But I think that for me always kind of made me feel like I had my own little routine no matter where we were. I was like, okay, I know that I can go and switch off. You know, I can separate away from the cast or whatever else is going on. And, you know, sometimes it was challenging. Like I kind of toured around America for about 9 months and there's some really remote places in America that was like really hard. But also I found that stuff like running and things like that, I got to see so many areas of cities that I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not there for a long period. So yeah, it's always been my kind of constant and kind of like safe haven, I guess.
I mean, my first job out of college was a US tour of a show, but we were really heavily rooted in like central, like what they call is kind of like the religious sector. Okay. The show started off in Branson, Missouri. And I was like, Mom, I'm going to America. And I got there and it was a great show to start there, but it was a very peculiar experience then to go to like New York and Chicago on tour after. So again, for you then in the fitness world, did you get like a gym membership everywhere you went or just like have a TheraBand in your bag?
To be honest, I toured in my case a couple of little kind of like resistance bands. I used to run a lot and for me, it was just kind of like, I'd always think, right, well, where am I heading to kind of for these couple of weeks? And what is it that I want to see? And I just kind of build it in around that. And usually, you know, other members of the cast would get involved, all that kind of stuff. Because it was just the thing to be able to separate from work, as you said. Because if not, work's your everything. You've got no hobbies outside of it. So yeah, it was always exciting because every place was different.
And tour's such a incubator, isn't it? So I guess
bubble.
Going to the gym was probably quite nice to be like, this is my alone time now.
Yeah. And like, you know, for example, when we were in America, I'd go for these runs and I'd just be like, right, see you guys later. And I'd just pop off and I'd go and run around and go and see things that I'd never thought that I'd get to before. And so it was always nice that I'd be able to separate myself from just being in the building or being at just rehearsals or anything like that. Because otherwise, sometimes on tour, you know, it's such a close dynamic. It's a family, but you need that time by yourself because otherwise it's just super intense and everything's so heightened and it gets a bit crazy.
I always say to fresh grads when I'm talking to them, like, one of the best things can sometimes be living with non-performers just to kind of keep you grounded or have that escapism.
Yeah.
So obviously we spoke about touring and then obviously Mamma Mia in the West End, Heathers as well. Also, both shows, like, do you actively pick shows? You're like, I need to be topless. That's a minimum criteria. Scuba
suit, was one of those things. I was actually chatting about this the other day that I don't know why it's happened, but in, I think, pretty much 95% of the shows I've ever been in, I'm always topless for some reason.
It's like in your rider for your agent.
Like, as long as I'm topless, it's fine.
Phantom, topless, I mean.
Exactly, I'll do it. But I don't know kind of why that's ended up happening. But as I say, it's because when I first got into performing, I was so out of my depths that it was the kind of, I guess the fitness stuff like partner work and things like that were the things I enjoyed because I knew I could bring an element of stuff that I could do outside of it. Whereas if it came to bloody kicking a leg or anything like that, I had no hope. So it was more about diving into what I was good at as opposed to what I wasn't.
Yeah, we must say, well, we will not just do shows that are topless. Agents, give him jobs with clothes on. He will take those as well, we should say. And obviously, though, with that, this industry, comparison. Yeah. Not only are we looking in the mirror every day just to improve, then when you're in maybe shows where there's a physical element on top of it, how did that kind of sit with you? And I guess in like your psyche and like your mental health as well, because that's something we maybe don't work out as much, the mental health and that mental fitness is so important.
I think that, you know, I think the hardest part of this industry is the comparison element, because, you know, whether it's not the physical aspect, if you see a show announcement, right, it triggers something within us and it always leaves us feeling a little bit of a feeling of like failure or not good enough. And so for me, when it comes to that kind of comparison element, especially in my scenarios, it'd come a lot to the physical side of things. I'd always try and separate myself from it, because, you know, there were times where I would question, be like, am I only in this because I would take off my top kind of thing. Yeah. But it's one of those things that you have to feel so confident within yourself and your skin that you then don't think about others as much. You're always going to think about someone else, right? That's life. But if you can feel confident in your skin, those thoughts don't really come in as much. Because otherwise I'd find that sometimes, you know, and so many people have had it before, when you go into an audition, you'll be so focused on the person next to you that you'll completely forget about everything you're doing. Because you'll be like, oh my God, they're wearing the same vest as me or the same top, and they look 10 times better in it than me. And you, or they sang the same song that I did. And we start to kind of make these stories up in our minds about things going on. So for me, it was all about just kind of being able to switch off and be like, well, this is my version of things. So that's all I can do. And kind of go from there. And I think that with that, I'd never really had a fear or worry of taking my top off, because I'd always be like, all right, fine. Don't worry. Like, you know, it's not something that I'd think of, because I felt so kind of like confident in just myself as opposed to my body, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, of course. And I hear in a lot of interviews with athletes, it's the whole idea of control the controllables, isn't it? And that sounds exactly what you've said there. And I think sometimes as performers, we don't give ourselves that space to do that. It's always, how can I be better? I wasn't good enough. When actually it's like, how am I doing today? This is my 100% today. This is how I just need to show up and give that.
Yeah, because the truth of it is, this industry, there's not much we can control, right? We can't control when our agent gets a call. We can't control the auditions we get sometimes. Like, there's so many things that are out of our control. But within that, there are so many things that we can. And I'm a big believer that if you take control of those controllables, like you said, those things that you can't control, you tend not to focus on as much, because you're going, well, I'm doing everything my end. So, you know, those things will happen. We start to not focus so much on the things that are out of our control, because otherwise in this industry, if you focus on the things that are out of your control, there's so many, you know, we need to be able to take some of that ownership back.
And also, I sent you questions. I've not really asked you any of those. I'm just giving you random ones, but you're doing very well, Roy. Thanks. Very well. So before we go diving straight into Stage Strong, did that naturally build up over your performing career? Because obviously you're still actively performing and auditioning when it fits around this other business now.
Yeah.
Did it naturally build up, or was it kind of something that was like, this happened and you're like, okay, let's go with it?
Well, it was a weird one, because, you know, I was technically a trainer before I was an actor. So I was coaching people when I was at college and different things like that. And it'd always be one of those things that, you know, if I was in a show, you know, I'd be going, all right, I'll help you do this or whatever. And I always loved it, but had this fear of being like, oh God, if I put myself out there, you know, you get nervous about kind of what other people would think. And it sounds ridiculous, even though we're in an industry where you do put yourself out there. I was like, oh, you know, what about making that jump? And it was, last year, I was having my kind of second operation on my shoulder, which I'd torn before in a show. And I was kind of sat there and I was like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to do it. Because I was like, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, someone might make a comment about something. And I, you know, although I'd been training quite a lot of people not under the name Stay Strong, I was like, you know, I'm just going to do it. And yeah, I opened it and just was met with so much support from so many people. And it kind of just snowballed from there, really.
And obviously you said there that you had that baseline of like skill set in it and knowledge. So was it also quite nice then? Because I know when I transitioned from performing to journalism and presenting, there's almost like, I don't want to say false confidence, but it's like, you meet me now, you only know me as this.
Yeah.
Where when you're a performer and you've been hustling and auditions, like people have their ideas of you or where they think you fit. So was it also quite nice maybe having this other world where like you just started there, like that was your expertise. And when you introduced yourself as that, people just had to kind of take your word for it.
Yeah. And it was really nice, because I was like, oh, I get to share my passion with other people. And, you know, the big thing for me is that the reason why I set up Stay Strong and the reason why it's specifically for creatives is because I know how I felt so many times in shows, even when I felt my best, you know, my confidence might be shot or I might be anxious about things. And so for me, I was like, do you know what? If I can just spend time with people that are feeling the same way and help them in any way, then I'll enjoy that process. And then I found that I was getting such like a kick from it that it was almost replacing that kind of love of performing. I was like, oh my God, I love doing this. This is so much fun. So I think that it was just being able to share that kind of like experience with other people. And yeah, it's just kind of grown into this kind of little thing that I love.
I love what you said there about, it's that buzz, isn't it? I think when people clap us for a living, it's so hard to find that feeling. So when you do, I'm always like, just grab onto it. Even if it's fleeting, do that other thing just while you've got that buzz.
Yeah, because there's, any of my like friends, muggle friends, let's say, that, you know, when they talk to me about performing, I always say you can't put a feeling on that thing when you're stood on stage and there's an audience clapping, right? No one can ever replace that. Yeah. But it's knowing that there's other like highs that you can find in life that can, you know, accommodate that, and you kind of can share that experience. Because otherwise, you know, you're almost chasing that next applause always. And it makes it a really tough game because it's like constantly trying to play catch up.
Yeah. And you're very open on your social media about that, which I love. And if we can just maybe explore that idea of chasing, and then we attach our worth to it, whether it's a 2-week job, 2-month job, whatever it is. But then when it's finished, you're like, oh gosh. And we have to be so good at starting again. So as this, as Stay Strong was growing, was that something where you were able to kind of be a bit more bird's eye view of the industry and be like, all right, hang on a minute. Why am I attaching my worth to another project? Or do I drop really low once I'm out of that job?
Yeah, I think for me, it kind of hit me like a pile of bricks, really, in that I always said to my mom and dad when I was like, I'm going to try and become an actor. I always said to them, I was like, the moment that I stop enjoying it, or the moment I do it because it's just a job and that's what I do, just like flag it with me and just like tell me. And I'll never forget, and you know, they won't mind me kind of talking about it, but I was just about to finish my run in Heathers. We'd just done the kind of live capture. And I remember turning to Maddie, my partner, I was like, I think I'm done. And she was like, why? And I was like, every job I'm looking at now, I'm purely looking at it as a job perspective. There's no passion behind it. I was just thinking of it like that. And I was like, I don't know why that is. And I feel like I've lost that reason for why I perform. And so for me, it was a really important moment to go, okay, I've lost myself within this and I need to take a moment. And I did take that moment to kind of go, okay, why is that the case? Yeah. And it's meant that since then, going and doing other shows and different things, I'm going into it from a place of being like, okay, right, this is why I do it. Because otherwise, you can lose yourself so deep in it that, you know, there was moments that you'd see a cast announcement, you'd even see friends in that cast announcement. And even though on the surface, you'd be going, oh my God, I'm so happy for you. There's that thing, and not many people want to admit it, there's that thing inside us that goes, oh God, I can't believe I didn't get that. Even if you weren't auditioning for it. Even if it was not your casting, you'll still be going, oh bitch. Do you really you'll have a bit of that frustration. And I think that's not necessarily us. That's just our ego being like, oh God, I need to be in another show because that validates who I am as a performer.
Yeah. And I think people don't talk about it. And I think it's part of this industry and it's healthy, I think, to kind of just expose that and be like, yes, you support your friends, but there is that moment when you're like,
of course
could
there
it
is.
Be me?
Yeah. It always. And you know, even if you've been in an audition before and there's a friend in there, there's times where you might get cut or they might stay and you go, really happy for you kind of thing. And you don't want, and you feel really guilty about it. But again, that's the part of the controllables and the uncontrollables, because you can't help the way you feel in that moment, right? But if there's a way that you go, well, I do have a whole life that's not attached to whether the metric of this panel says yes or no, your whole like happiness doesn't ride on it. And I think that those are the moments that you always hear people saying they booked the jobs that they didn't expect to. And they're like, oh, I don't know how that happened. And it's usually because that's when we're most ourselves and most relaxed. Well, I believe that anyway. And so I think that that's been the biggest thing for me, is just having those conversations. Because I used to always think, oh God, it's just me feeling this way. And the moment I started talking to people about it, they're like, oh my God, for the exact same way. You know, I have those feelings every time that happens. But again, it's just, I think in this industry, we feel like we can't talk about because it's ungrateful or, you know.
Yeah, and it's like that sense of belonging. We want to know that we're not the only one feeling it. Yeah. So many people do. And like, as you said, we book more jobs when we are relaxed. And it's like, I always say about just been trying to be as authentic as you can. Yeah. And then people buy into personality. We buy into brands that we know, like, and trust. It is when you can just trust on your skill set, know who you are, and know that you will slot into the industry. But it's hard. It's that analogy of when you're inside the bottle trying to read the label, isn't it? But when you actually can try and be like hippy hippy dippy, but when you can be bird's eye view on it, it can be so reflective. And do you see that now with your fitness clients? Do you maybe see a little bit of how you were in them if they're a little bit lost or they're not booking and they're angry?
You know, it's what's really nice is the way that we kind of have a structure of things is all of our clients can talk to each other. And the reason why we do that, the reason why we encourage that is because if, for example, I'm chatting to a client and they might say, you know, I have a really tough time, I've got a few no's this week or things aren't going my way, we'll discuss it with them. And what we always say, like, guarantee there's at least five people else in this group that are feeling the same way. And lo and behold, there always is. And so I'm always big for, yes, share your wins that are going on, share that show announcement, but also share when things are feeling tough, because sometimes in this industry, it can feel, although we are friends with everyone and everyone's so loving, it can feel extremely lonely and it can always feel like we're in it by ourselves. And so for me, it's like, just let other people know how you're feeling, because usually they'll go, felt that way a million times. And so it's just knowing that that's okay, I think. And so that's the bit that I enjoy most really about things.
And I think sometimes it's magnified because as dancers, typically, like that was my background, they always need at least two. Always two. And then it grows up, 2, 4, 6, or whatever. But as an actor, singer, you're often auditioning by yourself unless you're reading lines with someone. And in the audition, you maybe only see the person before and after you. So I think that's even more isolating. Because at least when you get cut as a dancer, you're with like three of our friends and you're like, oh, should we go like get a wine or a coffee? But sometimes as an actor, it's probably even magnified even more because you are, it's just you in that room in that moment, like second guessing yourself.
Yeah. And I think the big thing as well is, and I know, again, I'm definitely not the only one, when that email comes through of what that schedule looks like with the money or the days off and things like that, no matter what, you've instantly pictured yourself in that job every time. So when you do get a no, it's like, not only have you got a no, it's like you've lost the job that was supposed to be yours. And so again, it's kind of been there to be like, okay, that's fine. It wasn't for me. This next opportunity will be, and just kind of navigating that.
I mean, you said about schedule there. So do you now look at, when you're working with your clients, because I know you've got clients in TV, film and theatre, when you're a performer and you've got 8 shows, you're like, sure, I've trained all my life, I can do it. But it's brutal, like knowing how to like eat, sustain, the fact that you're finishing quite late. Do you now approach that with your clients maybe a bit differently than when you first booked your first show?
100%. God, I was just flying by my coattails like when that happened. And I think that, you know, it is really hard to navigate. We work at the opposite time to everybody else. And so for me, especially when we kind of work with our clients, it's about understanding their schedule and also understanding their lifestyle, right? Because some of us will go to bed really late or wake up really late, or, you know, we might have different things that are going on. So for me, everybody's routine is unique to them. But yeah, I mean, God, when I first started, it would just be the most rogue meals that I just kind of make up and just try and like get through it and, you know, live on Nando's pretty much. But it was that was pretty much it.
I thought, why? It wasn't until my friend said this once. Because I was like, I've done a dance class, I can eat what I want. And I was like, my friend was like, you're not a dog. Do not reward yourself with food. And I was like, that is true, Jamie. You are not a dog. Do not. I got one dance class doesn't always equate the same amount of calories. It's like, I can eat it all. So yes, very good. So let's talk now business mind. Mm. So running this business, we spoke off air about how you're having to manage people now. There's so much more than just, oh, I'm a successful PT. You're like, you're running the business. Mm. Was anything quite eye-opening to you when Sage Strong started to kind of grow? As you said, 2025 was a year of firsts.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Maybe kind of think, oh gosh, this is something different.
Yeah, do you know, for me, it's been a really steep learning curve and everything was new, because what I didn't realize is that there's so much kind of like, especially when starting a business, that you don't get taught at college, which is weird because we are our own businesses and you think that's such a useful skill for us to know. But it was just silly things like understanding how to, God, put together platforms for things to use or different kind of ways to get people to communicate. But for me, it was really, I worked with a mentorship that really helped me and more understanding the logistics of business and understanding that. And, you know, when having staff, how does that work? And how does that happen? So for me, it's been a really steep learning process. But the biggest core element that I've had is that for me, it's not about, I have no interest in being the biggest fitness coach for performers. I have no interest in that at all. We just want to be the best for the performers that we have, because I would rather know each of my clients personally and be like, that's so exciting. I can't believe they managed to do that. Then who is that? Do you know what I mean? And for me, it's, we like to be very involved, which obviously is limiting as a business model, but I'd rather forget that and look at more of the actual approach of it being that we can trust our clients and they can trust us.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that, because that's when I, many years ago, started the business or show business with my lectures and this podcast, because it's not taught at college. And I'm like, your talent will only get you so far. So do book me for a workshop. But what skills have you now learned as a business that you think, oh, I wish I had done that as a performer, or that you do now bring into you, into your life as a performer?
I think it's knowing that the skill set we get taught as performers is so unique and so transferable into business. It's crazy. And what I mean by that is that we have a unique ability to be able to communicate really well with people. And, you know, because we put ourselves out there and have to stand in front of a panel, that there's a world in which we are very useful in business terms. And so I guess it was that. It was kind of learning to back myself a lot more and being like, George, what's the worst that can happen? And I'd say in terms of business side of stuff, it's, you know, as performers, we're really willing learners because we want to always be at our best. So I kind of enjoyed it. It was like kind of going to college again, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And it's like, there's always so much, like the landscape is changing so much digitally and stuff like that as well. So I think it's that element of learning. We go to class, whether it's singing, dancing, acting, to learn more. So I think as a business, we need to invest in that same level of learning, or at least want to be better.
Yeah.
What are some red flags you now see from performers doing when they are marketing themselves? Because I think we're so used to showing how good we are, but it's actually, how do I tell you? Because a lot of the time we're sending that email, like, how do you pitch yourself? So are there any red flags you see with performers that you think, oh, that's not the best reflection of their brand?
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's just being you and being authentically like you. And what I mean by that is often, you know, I find as well, because I was never very good at social media or anything like that. And so I was kind of learning that process, but just actually putting yourself across rather than the version that you think people want to see. That's probably been the biggest element for me to learn, because, you know, when I first started, I was putting everything, being like, oh, people want to see this, or people want to see me with my top off doing this. And I suddenly realized it was just more just speaking about kind of where I'm at with things that have seemed to, I don't know, connect with people a bit more on a deeper level. So yeah, that would be it, is just being you, not the version that you want, that people think that they should see from you, if that makes sense.
There's a quote that I think I'm going to butcher, but it's, I think I am what you think I am. So if I think Rory thinks I'm really successful, really rich, really funny, that's the version I'm putting across. So you know what I mean?
Okay.
So and it's like, so what we think the industry thinks we are, what we think the industry thinks we should be, and that sometimes dilutes your product, doesn't it? Or you get in front of the wrong demographic or the wrong market.
Yeah, and I believe that all comes across really from when we start auditioning in front of panels, because we're trying to give them what they want to see, when 9 times out of 10, they just want to see what you're putting across. And so it becomes this really hard dynamic that we're trying to be like, oh, I think they really want this.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I wish I'd just done it how I wanted to do it, you know?
Like shoehorning something in when they're like, oh, we don't need to see that. And a prime example, when I used to work for Disney, I sometimes sat in on casting, or had friends that worked in casting, and someone would come in thinking, I'm Snow White. So they'd put a red ribbon in their hair and a little rosy cheek, but they don't realise the casting panel's like, oh, they're actually too tall for that, or their animation and performance lends itself more to this, but it's hard for them to see beyond what they've just given them. So I think, being authentic is so key. Talk to me quickly about the clients you work with then. So if anyone's listening and they're like, right, I want to not quote unquote just get into like shape and ripped, but they want to be strong, be resilient. Who do you work with?
So we work only with actors and creatives. That's kind of our kind of go-to. Yep. And the big thing is we work with people that are wanting to ultimately the place that they've been stopping themselves from getting to before now. So whether that's physically, whether that's mentally, for me, that all falls under the same category. Yeah. And so for us, we really work with creatives to build a unique structure for them and to help them build sustainable long-term habits and goals as opposed to quick fixes. Because we've all seen those crazy oiled up photo shoots after 10 weeks where people look like skeletons. Yeah. But for us, it's about celebrating things and not just making a change for now, making a change long-term. Because our goal really is to get you feeling as positive about yourself as possible, because that for me correlates massively into your work. Because then you get excited about performing rather than that dreaded email from an agent that we say we're really happy to get, but deep down we're going, I don't want to go in, you know, defeating that.
I guess those skills translate word for word what you said as a performer there, having those goals, having those systems in place to keep you incentivized and keep your... use your trade at the top of its like game with that. So I think that's really interesting then that actually your fitness isn't just contained to in the gym. The ripples that you're going to have to your career are going to be so positive.
Yeah. And you know, with our, I'm very proud of our team that we have at Stage Strong. And you know, from having a therapist on board to our strength and conditioning team, we kind of cover all angles. Because for me, it's, if you were to come to me and be like, I want to get in amazing shape, there's a reason for that. And me teaching you how to do a squat isn't going to change how you feel about yourself. It's not, because often people will get into that incredible shape and still feel like there's something missing. So for me, it's understanding the deeper meaning behind the why. And we're very selective, because when we work with someone, there needs to be a why behind their journey. Because otherwise it all becomes very just like, okay, fine, I'll go to the gym. But we want it to be a process of being like, well, why do you want to feel that way? And therefore, how can we get you to feel that way? Cool. Because for me, it's, you know, I don't get a huge buzz off someone being like, I weighed this much on the scales. It doesn't bother me. It's more about how you feel about yourself.
Gosh, that's quite confronting, is it? My next question was like, how do I lose 5 stone by tomorrow? But now obviously I can't. But no, it's that why. And again, that's so much in life, isn't it? Remembering your why. Before we get on to our special closing round, you've spoken quite openly there about the mental well-being as well. And that obviously goes hand in hand. So what are maybe some of, having now had your business for a while, what are maybe some of the key things people come to you from? Is it a particular injury and that's kind of also taken their mental health one way? Or if they, as you said, is it kind of they're a bit lost and you're almost in a way, you're obviously not a qualified therapist. Maybe you are, I don't know. But in a way you're having to be, aren't you? Because you're helping someone get above the line.
Yeah, so the main kind of things we see is, you know, people recovering from injury or people, for example, no longer feeling confident in their skin. And that is the hardest part, because if your job is to put yourself out there day in, day out, if you don't feel great about yourself, it becomes a really difficult working scenario. So that's usually the case. And, you know, we approach that from a thing of putting in habits and structure for them. Now, of course, I am not a therapist and I would never say that I am, but thankfully we do have a wonderful therapist on our team. And for us, it's being able to navigate that as a thing of going, right, these are the steps that we can do, but ultimately, are they steps that work for you? Because your life will be completely different to somebody else's life. And it's not right for me to be like, this is the one and only way. Yeah. It's more about going, okay, cool. These are things that we could start to look at. And if they start to work, great. Let's start building them. If they don't, let's change them. So it's very much a collaborative effort.
And then if we kind of jump back to your performance career, Heathers, Greece, Mamma Mia, they are probably some people's dream jobs.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to someone who wants to audition for those shows or just auditioning in general? Is there a little tidbit you think, start looking at yourself like this?
Yeah, for me, it was, I would always know before going to an audition, like how it made me feel. I used to always say that there'd be either a gut reaction or a heart reaction to an email. If I got that heart email, I'd be like, okay, this is it. I love these shows. This is what I want to do. And so my biggest thing would be, how can I show up to that day just feeling really confident and happy, right? You know, I might not be able to pick up the routine as best as everyone, or I might not sing the song as best as everyone, but it's how can I put my version of things across? Is it my personality that can come through rather than thinking about specifically an element of the dance? So I would say that really leaning into that, whether it's a gut reaction or a heart reaction, because those auditions that tend to be the ones that were a gut reaction were the ones that I didn't want to go to, didn't want to be in, and therefore never ended the way that I wanted them to. So I think that that would be the thing, is just always remembering the reason why you're going to it. And if it is because you're excited for those opportunities, just allow yourself to be excited. Like, we do one of the coolest jobs in the world.
Yeah.
So we need to be able to embrace that.
Exactly. Right, quickly bust. I want you to bust one fitness myth and one performing myth. It could be don't eat carbs, or it could be like only like have lozenges. What is, why be one myth about fitness and one myth about the industry you want to set straight?
I'd say fitness myth with the industry is the fact that you can't push yourself to achieve certain physical goals if you're in a show and that you'll always be burnt out. It's not a thing. Burnout often happens due to a number of reasons, whether that's nutrition, whether that's our energy balance, whether it's a ton of different variations. But ultimately, you can still achieve the goals that you want physically whilst in a show. Just because the show is physically demanding doesn't mean that that gets cut off. It's just you have to look at it through a different lens, because people will think that the only way to do it is to go to the gym 5 days a week. I've been a coach now for like 17 years. I don't go to the gym 5 days a week. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like it's got to fit your schedule for you to get the best results.
Yeah. And then one myth and about fit. Well, you kind of did both then. Okay, is there something else that drives you wild when someone's like, oh, I've only been eating like wheat for this long and I should be great, but I'm not. Like, is there anything?
I'd say it's underfueling as a performer as well. Again, there's the amount of diets you see on Instagram and social media, and don't eat carbs, or, you know, cut your calories down to this much. Don't do it. Ultimately, it's got to work for you. And if you ever at any point feel crap while you're at work, like it's clearly not serving you. So just please stop watching TikTok.
No, yeah, you know what? TikTok, it's wild, because there's so many amazing things on there, but there's so many gurus or go-to experts. And I'm like, yes, you need to learn from multiple sources, but some of the stuff out there, I'm like, that's not sustainable, whether it's fitness or as a business incentive. I'm like, so yes, I love that you said that there. It's like, just be vigilant at what you are consuming.
Yeah, and just ask questions. If you don't feel it's working for you, ask someone, because I think that we'll see so many different reels or TikToks that will tell us to do this one thing is going to change everything. Yeah. And we do it and potentially doesn't feel great for us, but then we feel like we're the failure for trying it. And so I'd say just kind of switching that mindset.
On your first point, so tomorrow I've got rehearsals for something. So I was like, I can't go to my spin class in the evening, but now I feel like I should still go to spin class.
We'll go together.
Yes, please do. Okay, so we're going to get to our final little round. This is like that post-gym burn now, that workout.
Okay.
But it's a round I started on the newest season. So it's our lights, questions, action. And I'm just going to throw questions at you.
Yeah.
I just want you to think. Just let it go. Okay. Nothing too deep. Don't worry.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so the first one for our lights, questions, action is burpees or planks? I'm just always like,
are you a burpees person?
Well, probably neither, to be honest, but with planks, I'm always like convulsing after like 10 seconds, but good. Cardio day or leg day?
Leg day.
George Michael's played a big part in your life. Yes. What's one song you can sing and never tire from of a George Michael catalogue?
I would probably say, If You're There by Wham. It's my favourite.
I should also say, he's not just obsessed with George Michael. You were in a show that took you everywhere. Just like,
singing the
music. Is that Comic Con with George Michael? No, he was in a professional production touring with that. Next up, what's always in your gym bag?
Water bottle and snacks.
It's your cheat meal. What's the one thing that you can have? No calories counted.
Oh God, cheat meal. I love chicken wings. Like, love chicken wings. And my favorite ever chicken wing place I went to randomly in America was DJ Khaled's wing shop. And they served a dish called All I Do Is Wing, 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 No Matter What. Incredible. The marketing, phenomenal. Sold me instantly.
We are looking for sponsorship from chicken wings. So yeah, do check Rory out for that. That would be great. Continuing on, one muscle group performers always neglect.
I'd arguably go back to legs.
Yeah.
We always say, I don't need to train my legs. You know, I'm a dancer.
Yeah.
And usually that's where we get all our injuries.
Exactly. And that's why you probably have only got like maybe some developed muscles in one area, but they're not next. Yeah. Favorite workout song that gets you pumped?
Oh, that's difficult. Do you know what? I'm Remember the Name is the name of the song, but I can't remember the band. Yeah.
It's okay.
That's really hard, isn't it? Yeah, Remember the Name. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, it's really good. We touched upon this a bit, but New Year's resolutions, yay or nay?
Nay.
Nay. This all year round.
Well, I just believe, why should you wait until one day to tell you how you want to change things? Because ultimately we make this huge to-do list and then by January 5th, it feels stupidly overwhelming.
Yeah.
But we'll have ticked off the easy ones like go for a walk at least twice, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Dream show you want to perform in, whether it's still out there or it's company retired but may come back, what would be a dream show for you?
I used to have a little list, actually. And I would say that my dream show was always Saturday Night Fever. If that ever came back, I would do it in a heartbeat. I loved Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
Our House.
Oh.
Loved Our House.
I feel like Legally Blonde fits into that narrative of that, like that American high school show that you
That's
do.
That's pretty like much the, my kind of like my thing. Although I'm definitely aging out of that bracket slowly
Lies.
But surely.
Lies. And my last question, we've been on a podcast. So do you like to leave, send a text or a voice note that's the size of a podcast?
Depends. Depends on the day. I would say a text because you can actually kind of narrate exactly how you're feeling. Whereas I feel that a voice note, often I can, a 30-second voice note that I want to send will end up being 6 minutes, which is pure garbage. And I'll forget what I've kind of put in. Yeah.
This is mainly chicken wings. That's
yeah, mainly chicken wings. That's it.
Yeah, to your wife. Get me chicken wings, Maddie. I'm coming home from the gym. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rory. Where can people find you online?
So they can find me on Instagram, which is at @RoryField_, or on StageStrong, which is at @StageStrong_. And we're there.
Fantastic. So thank you so much for listening and watching. Wherever you watch or listen, make sure you leave your comment and subscribe. And we'll be back next time with another episode.